Now we are joined here in studio by Adara Ayira, who joins us once again, project manager of the More in the Middle initiative at the Associated Black Charities, facilitator and analyst with Baltimore Racist Justice Action, a program of Fusion Partnerships. Good to see you once again.
Thank you for inviting me.
We hear Amy Deng joins us once again. Good to have you here, Amy.
Thanks.
So we know each other. They've never been on the show. She is a musician, a sitar player, administrator at the Real News Network, and serves as development consultant for arts organizations in Baltimore, including Force Upsetting Ray Culture and Arts Every Day. Joins us in the studio for the first time. Good to have you here.
Thanks.
And Michelle Antoinette, the poet, love the poet, is back in the studio. Her book, Black Marks on White Paper, active member of the Maryland Speakers Bureau on Poetry for the People of Baltimore, indie spoken word artist, traveling across the globe doing her work. Good to see you, love.
Good to be here. How you doing?
I'm doing great. And awesome. Y'all can join us at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook pages, even though Adar doesn't have one.
That's exactly right. I refuse. But
good
you can
you.
Find me on Twitter.
Okay.
I am on Twitter.
And you can also, of course, tweet us at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. Did I say your name right? Ami Deng.
Ami.
I said Amy. Ami. I said Amy too quickly. Ami Deng. 410-319-8888. So one of the things I thought we'd start with, just looking at the culture of the moment, there's so many things going on. There are all these kind of blogs on Jezebel and The Root and many other places about costumes on Halloween.
Oh, yeah. That's getting interesting.
Somebody, one of our good friends here, Carla, will say today she was walking in the store and saw this young man kind of buying all this blackface stuff to wear for Halloween. And her daughter was getting incensed at watching this guy buy this stuff. And I said, well, maybe he wanted to be a zombie, but maybe not.
Mm-hmm.
So, but there's that. There's the everything from the kind of not so innocent and bizarre people dressing up as Trayvon Martin and Zimmerman in blackface, the Africa parties taking place where people dress in blackface, to going back to years of childhood for those who were in their 50s and 60s and 40s, where people in a very innocent fashion would wear serapes and sombreros and be a Mexican or whatever that is. And, you know, like just like you would dress up as an Indian, you would dress up as a Puritan. You know, so people dress in these, what were just costumes. But we don't consciously think about what they mean when they happen, because they were fun as children, as opposed to what's happening today in some ways, where it's fairly blatant about what's happening, even though people don't see it that way, or will not see it that way, or don't want to see it that way. So what do we say about these, how we, as we approach this holiday? Who wants to begin?
I feel like a Darsha.
Okay, let me. Yeah. I got this. Because I have a lot to say. But,
really?
You know, you all know, and some of your audience too, that I'm an anti-racism, anti-oppression facilitator. And a lot of times in training, and people will say, well, I don't know what institutional racism looks like. I don't know what structural racism looks like. I don't know what cultural racism looks like. And dressing up in all of these instances that you have cited, Mark, all of these are great examples of cultural racism, of othering. And the most incriminating part of this for me is that people still try to deracialize it and to treat it like anything else, that they're going as Snoopy or as Kermit the Frog or whatever. They're trying to divorce it from the history of this country. And in doing so, they're continuing the marginalization and the othering of people of color. So the phrase, the slogan, it is a culture, not a costume.
I've seen that recently.
Right.
I hope that people keep that in mind as they're going to buy costumes, quote unquote, to celebrate Halloween.
Ami?
I also just think it's really problematic when people of notoriety, you know, we have celebrities who are dressing up like this. I'm not saying I want to treat them any differently than, you know, your 18-year-old college freshman. But really, when you're already in the press, when everything you do is being scrutinized, don't you think you need to think about, like you said, the history of what's happened in this country. And, you know, these post-colonial narratives that are coming out on Halloween, I mean, I don't know. I feel like every 5 years I think, oh, this is going to stop now. Mm-hmm. Next year it's going to be better. And then we see this. Like the Africa-themed party just got me enraged because you walk into a party where presumably, I'm assuming that was a 99% white, like a white party with people whose bodies are covered in black paint. Mm-hmm. I'm going to assume that our listeners haven't seen the photos of this and really.
We can post them on the site. We have them.
Utterly horrified to see that because, yeah, I mean, again, just what Eddie was saying, that how can you not think about a history of what's happened in our country, whether it's the civil rights movement or now touching on immigration issues, you know, people dressing up. I think in the past I've seen something like people dressing up as quote unquote wetbacks, mm-hmm. you know, and people running for the border as if that's cute or funny. I mean, come on.
I think an issue that we're having is that people aren't thinking about it. They're thinking it's 2013 and we've pushed envelopes in so many other ways, you know. But what they don't understand is that this is beyond things like that. What you just said, it's a culture, not a costume. Mm-hmm. And my sister and I, Kimberly Nicole, we just had this conversation and she said, you know, if I want my daughter to be Katy Perry or somebody or if my daughter wants to be Katy Perry for Halloween, I might change her hair, put on an outfit, maybe have like a little name tag or something, but I'm not going to paint her face white. And I think that was a great example to me about why that's so problematic. When I was just in New York this weekend and I was in a consignment shop and this young man, he was brown. I don't know his ethnicity, but he was walking around with a pregnant belly thing underneath his shirt saying he was practicing for his Halloween costume. He worked in the store and he's like he was going to be an pregnant African woman with a baby strapped to his back. And I could not put my finger on why I was so disturbed. Like, I literally just walked away because I did not know him. But I was so, it did something to me as a woman. And he wasn't white, you know what I mean? But just the idea of him thinking that that was okay. Whatever happened to wanting to be Superman or Batman or something that's like a football player, something generic. Why are we now targeting, we're zeroing in, like this young lady, I don't know the actress's name, but she wanted to be this other actress on a show.
Black is the New Orange.
Right. Yes. And she could have dressed in the jail suit, did her hair different, maybe put on a name tag said Crazy Eyes. Mm-hmm. But why do we feel like we need to be so literal? Mm-hmm. It's a Halloween. We're not being actors. We're not in theater. There's no message behind this. It's a Halloween gag. Halloween is supposed to be funny, or ironic or whatever. But that is, I think, to me, it causes a huge emotional uprising in me.
It's continuing to objectify black people's bodies is what it's doing.
Okay.
And this has happened in every aspect of American life.
They do it overseas in Europe.
Of course they do.
In fashion.
Absolutely.
The blackface in fashion. Mm-hmm.
And when you're talking about, I mean, since you brought that up, love, since when we're talking about fashion and there being a scarcity of any racial diversity on the runways, and instead they're putting white models in blackface, that continues to commodify and to objectify black bodies. And it's a different way of doing it other than enslavement, but it's still following that same philosophical perspective.
So let me ask a question. I know they're going through the minds of some folks as we listen to this conversation. I mean, I think in some ways Halloween is theater.
Mm-hmm,
I mean, it is. People. That's part of what people do. They come up with costumes. They become and they transform themselves into some of the being. People take a lot of time trying to be creative with what they're going to do. And we have a cult. So growing up, I don't remember as a kid seeing many white people wear blackface in Halloween. I see the phenomenon happening now for some reason more than
now, 20 or 30. Because we're just in an age where people are going above and beyond. They're just pushing envelopes.
So I can hear people asking the question, okay, well, wait a minute. well, what about if I'm dressed up as a Viking? What about if I'm dressed up as a Scotsman in my kilts? Mm-hmm. What about, so where do we draw the line at what, how you can dress as a different nationality on a holiday that is a holiday about, that we created as a costume holiday? Where, how do you make that line?
I think the sting comes in, Mark, if I may, I think the sting comes in when the paint is applied. And I know, like, I've heard people justify that it's not blackface. And I even started to say that, like, it's not blackface. It's not the black with the red lips. It's not blackface. It's not that. But I think, and as a black woman, I am often confused because I've been told my whole life that I'm black. I'm, you know, that's ugly. The skin color is this, that, and the third thing. But I watch white women tan. And I watch them get Botox, and I watch them get injections in their behind. And I watch these things where you're telling me that my skin color is a problem. And then you go, because I know that my skin color is cool. I know that my culture sets standards in this country, entertainment-wise, in film. I know that. I know that to be true. And you know it, too. And I think now some people may just be paying homage, and some people may be still be making fun of me. And I can't tell the difference. Mm. And that, I think, as a that's my personal issue. I think that's the root of it.
I can't get around to the fact that it does reference blackface and it does reference minstrel color culture. And when I see people appropriating, my family's Indian, you know, South Asian heritage, so people were wearing bindis and I want to be an Indian princess. And actually, I hung out with my niece this weekend who's going to be an Indian princess for Halloween, which I thought was very sweet. But I think that's a really good point, that as soon as you put on paint on your skin, it does reference it references art and performance that was made for white, that was white actors made for white audiences, or, you know, it references segregation, and it continues, even though I think that some people think that by putting on that face paint, they might be trying to wear the other and join the other, but
that's
really all it does is it draws harsher lines between communities of color. I really think it does.
I agree with everything, and a good standard is if the people that you are trying to represent, if they're not accepting, if they don't get it, if they're not laughing, then it's not funny.
I once asked a friend of mine. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I once asked a friend of mine. She black girl. She had, I guess you could say, like a geisha or like an, it was an Asian woman tattooed. She had these tattoos on her body, and I said, you know, it's very interesting that we would do this. Like, why would you put that on your body? Why would you wear that around your chain? Like, I've seen that, like, the Asian women on necklaces and stuff, and people wearing it like it's fashion. And I was like, how would you feel if somebody had, like, a black woman with an afro and, like, her fist in the air, like, on their neck or tatted on their arm? And
what
they were
would
white.
Be wrong with that?
Well, I just feel like we said, it's a culture, not a costume. It's like, it's...
But what does
that mean to you? Like, why do you have that? And she's like, well, I just have it. I just wanted to get it. But I was like, it's not a fictitious situation. Those are human beings. Like, we're objectifying somebody to the point where we're putting them on a chain and wearing them around our neck.
Yeah, well, also when you talk about geisha specifically, you have to understand the culture of a geisha. And the geisha was a female, not necessarily a prostitute, but she was serving women in tea houses. And, you know, and so what... Yeah,
like, why do you have it?
Well, you know, maybe if somebody's really had some aunt or mentor figure who was a geisha and has gone and spent time in those cultures, like, I could understand, you know, they have something to say
like
about
it. We have to take
a very short break. We're going to come right back. On our way out of here, remember, we're going to play I Always Love My Mama by the Intruders because we are remembering one of the great intruders who passed away on this day. So stay with us, and we'll go out with a little bit of Intruders. Come back with some Intruders, maybe. I love the Intruders.
I remember. shoot 'em up, shoot 'em up. Bang, bang, baby. I remember when I chased the girls and beat 'em up. But I was young and didn't understand. But now I'm a grown up man. I know girls are made for kissing.
Cowboys to Girls, The Intruders. And why? Because Eugene Bird Darty was born on this day in 1929. The Intruders really were a major soul group in the 60s, and so we just remember him. He's passed away as well, so we remember him on this day. And play a little bit of Intruders. More music coming up. But right now, back to our conversation here with Love the Poet. Black Marks on Paper is her book, mm-hmm. with Adara Ayira, project manager of the Middle Initiative of Associated Black Charities, mm-hmm. facilitator and analyst with Baltimore Racial Justice Action, and Ame Deng, who is a performer and administrator of the Real News Network and more, 410-319-8888. A lot of calls coming in. I'm going to get these calls, but we left off at a couple of places here. Let me go to the phones, and then we'll come back to what you wanted to talk about, Love, about banning of
twerking in Anne Arundel County High School.
And in my old man, I said, banning what? So, but we'll be right back to that in a minute. Let's go to Bruce. You're on the air.
Yeah, how you doing, Mark?
I'm good, Bruce. How are you?
All right. So I'm listening about with the Halloween costumes and stuff, and I think you guys are making a big thing out of nothing. So I'm a white person, but I don't like anybody that makes stereotypes of people. But then it gets ridiculous. You know, people, Halloween was supposed to be about kids and make-believe. People make-believe they're other people, and sometimes they exercise bad taste. So you turn it into something political. One other part of that statement, this has probably been about 15 years ago. I was in a Kmart, and a black woman looked like grandmother. The ages were different. Grandmother and a little child was probably about 8 or 9 years old, and they were buying a regular commercial costume that was a jumpsuit for somebody that was incarcerated. Isn't that kind of stupid, too? You guys, you always play the blacks and people of color are always the victims. Grow up.
Thanks, Bruce, for your admonition as well. The first part of your statement, I mean, let's talk about what you said besides the grow up part.
I'm sorry. He cracks me up.
But Bruce, what Bruce was saying about the idea of Halloween being a place where mm-hmm. you do stretch the limits and boundaries mm-hmm. of what you do.
Well, you know, the example that Bruce gave about a woman who he racially identified buying a prison jumpsuit. The prison jumpsuit, that wasn't racialized. There are people who are white who are incarcerated. There are people who are of color who mm-hmm. are incarcerated. When I go and look at stores, at Halloween costumes in stores, I don't see a Halloween costume for old white man.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see right. a Halloween costume mm-hmm. for, you know, entitled white woman or mm-hmm. poor white woman. Mm-hmm. There's nothing that is sold with that statement being mm-hmm. attached to it. I do go and I see dreadlocks.
Mm-hmm.
I do go and I see blackface. Mm-hmm. I do go and I see things that are specifically mm-hmm. racialized to one or two groups of people, mm-hmm. and whites are not among them.
I find it interesting that he made the point to talk about the jumpsuit, because that means in his mind, when he sees a jumpsuit, he thinks of black people. And
exactly.
he brought it up as it being mm-hmm. something that maybe yes. she shouldn't do, because later on her child might end up in prison because she did. That's what I got from that statement.
Maybe. It might also just be that the kid's dressing up as a prisoner.
Yeah. Right. But he made it a point to make it clear that this was a black woman taking her black
exactly.
baby to get a jumpsuit.
Exactly.
Right,
that was a point.
Yeah.
But again, that Utter made a good point that those are not racial, that prisoner could be white, could be black. And when you go to the store, like something that drives me crazy is seeing the terrorist outfit. And the terrorist mm-hmm. outfit is always a brown person. It's mm-hmm. always with the turban mm-hmm. and the robes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What about the Oklahoma bombings?
Yes.
What about all the mm-hmm. American white terrorists that we've
witnessed in this
country?
Yeah, you don't see the Klan outfits hanging
up in the
right. stores. And
right.
you don't see swastika tattoos. You know what mm-hmm. I mean?
And
they could just be Edward Norton from American History X.
Yes.
Well, I mean, you do see Nazi uniforms, yeah. People, and there were things.
I've never seen that. You've
oh, I
seen
have.
That?
Oh, absolutely. Oh. Oh, yeah, yeah. And I've seen people dressed up as Nazis at Halloween, and. Mm.
But wow. But Mark, when people dress, if people dress up as Nazi members, or if yeah. they put a white sheet over their head and dress up as Klans people, that is not seen in the mind of America as an indictment. Or as a statement on white people in the same way that blackface is mm-hmm. looked at, or mm-hmm. dreadlocks are looked at, or a prison jumpsuit mm-hmm. is looked at in the minds of, right. of a lot of white America.
Or dressing up, as you were saying before, as someone who's a terrorist looking mm-hmm. with a Middle Eastern face.
There's a Middle Eastern
face.
Look.
Right.
Or the costumes people used to wear sometimes in this country in the early part of the 20th century, where people dressed up with big noses. Mm-hmm. And beards to be Jews,
mm-hmm.
and that you know that kind of thing. So that we have a history of that kind of stuff.
We do. Right.
Let's see what our listeners are saying. 410-319-8888. Reverend Meredith, you're on the line.
Good morning, all. Good morning.
Good morning,
sister.
I think this conversation is awesome. It's so on time. But I just wanted to remind folks that Halloween actually, you know, comes from the Celtic tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And
it does.
It's a celebration mm-hmm. of the return of the ancestors as mm-hmm. the veil between the worlds on October 31st, known in the Druid tradition as Samhain, our
yes.
sins. Mm-hmm. So it was believed that the dead walked among the living, mm-hmm. so, which is why people dressed up as their ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
Being America, being capitalist and commercial, you know, it's gone completely far
yes.
away from that. But I do think the important part of what we're talking about today, that is this really appropriate? I know it's just something from a Halloween party where someone was supposedly dressed as Trayvon, and then
mm-hmm.
somebody was
mm-hmm.
neighborhood watch, and the guy who was dressed as Trayvon was in blackface and had, like, blood on his shirt. Like,
yes.
how appropriate is that? Like, at what point do we say that this is not appropriate for human beings to imitate? Like, you know, I definitely like to hear you all think about how do we teach young people what is appropriate in regard to how we're dressing up and things of that nature? Because there's also talk in the feminist community about young girls being sexualized in Halloween during as you know, in sexy attire that's inappropriate for their age. So I'll take the answer off the air.
Reverend Meredith, it's always good to hear from you. And I think that's also important just to take one step back first before we jump into the commentary and we go to the comment you want to bring up before we move on to the story we have to play, which is we have to remember Halloween. The holiday came out of the original Celtic holiday,
mm-hmm.
Which was a kind of a spiritual holiday, as she said, between the world that people pass over to the world we're in now, which is why mm-hmm. we transformed it in the West to the rest of the West to ghoulish costumes.
Mm-hmm.
So we've gone from this kind of creative ghoulish world
mm-hmm.
to this racial mimicry world.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is part of the.
Right. That's
the leap we've made.
Being able to do something you've always probably wanted to do in secret. And
right.
now I'm going to do it because it's Halloween. That's my reason.
And we,
you see what I'm saying?
And we also ignore the ways, Mark, that the people that we stigmatize and stereotype on Halloween, the way that it goes beyond Halloween and plays into day-to-day life. For instance, Ami, you brought up the costume of the terrorist, mm-hmm. this mm-hmm. brown Arab mm-hmm. in a turban. So maybe that's for Halloween, but when someone on January 1st is getting on a plane and they are brown mm-hmm. and they have on mm-hmm. a turban, mm-hmm. there is this residue of stigmatization mm-hmm. that still plays out in
Absolutely.
Our mind.
Yes.
We see it now without the costume.
Mm-hmm.
The costuming and the way the signal that costuming mm-hmm. sends just reinforces that.
We are playing, by playing those parts, we're reinforcing the other. Just
yes.
to sum up what you're saying.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So before we go back to the phones of 410-319-8888, Alan's next caller up. I promise we'll let love kind of bring up her angst of the moment. What is that?
yeah. Annapolis High School, Anne Arundel County, is now requiring that students and parents sign a dance contract, which aims to cut down on provocative dancing at the school's next homecoming, a.k.a. twerking. They have an anti-twerking contract that they have instilled at their school. And my concern here is, like, I'm 32, and I know that people in my generation are now the people that are the teachers, and they are the principals, and, you know, things like that. And when I was in school, this the way they define it is here. The contract states that sexually explicit dancing will not be tolerated and defines explicit dancing as grinding, making out, and buttocks touching a partner or in the air. The last point apparently intended to stop twerking at school functions. So, it also says they can't expose excessive amounts of skin. So, this is the definition in my day would have been called freaking in the schools. Right. Yep. And the twerking idea, I feel like it definitely has happened because it has been sensationalized and made into this tremendously terrifying thing by what Miley Cyrus did, being, as she said on Ellen, an adult baby with teddy bears everywhere. But I feel like culturally, just there's difference in age, the age gap or whatever. But I also think that for me as a little brown girl, a lot of the movement I used to do was very, you know, hip driven, you know, winding and things like that. My concern is that there's going to be a serious amount of young people standing up against the wall doing absolutely nothing at their dance because they I just think that's crazy.
But we have, what we were talking about earlier, what I said during the break when you said that, I said, and then in my day it was the schools went to the ban grinding when you dance slower, hold a ruler between people to make sure that you were a certain distance apart when you had a slow dance, right? And that you didn't touch inappropriately if you were doing the jitterbug or whatever, you know? But I think that culture is in societal culture, especially in the West, has always been terrified of sexuality.
But listen to the music.
But what I'm saying is that people always try to make these barriers against sexuality and being terrified of young people and sexuality in general. There's always this joke about you picked the Protestant faith, and the joke is always, you know, they want to ban sex because it could lead to dancing. So I mean, and I think that's part of it. I mean, that's part of what our fear is in this culture is anything that's sexual, and you add race inside the sexuality, and it just compounds it.
But then you have, like, the definition of it, like the buttocks touching somebody. That's very clear.
Yeah.
But in the air, like,
I mean, what does that mean?
Right.
Like, they're just there. Right. I mean, they're in the air no matter how my body is contorted otherwise. Right.
I'm just worried that people will be targeted. Yeah. You know, and these kids are getting in trouble. And they were saying that one couple did have to get, we're told to leave. But my thing is it's up to your discretion. So I just worry that idea is going to spread, and they're going to label it twerking and not really understand what twerking is or what it was before it became this big, terrible joke. But you know what I'm saying?
Thank you, Miley Cyrus.
Right. Thank you. What did you say when I brought it up? You said it was another appropriation.
Yes. Oh, yeah. It is definitely appropriating, and this is a whole other subject. But the short version is, I watched her performance, and again, the objectifying black women, black women's bodies, Miley Cyrus,
with that lady,
right? Exactly, slapping her on the butt. You know, she stated on this new album, or when she was making a new album, she wanted, quote, a black sound. So she was very clear about her appropriating. And, you know, we see it through other data, Mark, in terms of African-American boys being more accepted in schools that are majority white than African-American girls. There is this coolness factor, quote unquote, that is assigned to African-American males,
That's
this box
saying.
That they are put in. And part of what's going on now and the repercussions is that this box may work well in some situations, but then when people seem to be, quote unquote, dangerous, when they fall into America's definition of what that is, whether it is the dance style, whether it is just being too big, too black, too whatever, all of a sudden that becomes a problem.
Right.
So on the way to the phones here, I'm curious, also this fits in a kind of a broad spectrum, and then Alan, we're going to come right to your call here in the 10 minutes we have left in the segment. I was thinking, May, about colonialism and things I've read just about British colonialism and French colonialism and the commodification of Indian women's bodies mm-hmm. and Indian sexuality mm-hmm. and what is exotic.
Oh, yeah, that
right?
word.
Right?
That right? word, exotic. I don't even know how to start with that. Yeah, I mean, but it plays into all of the women of it's women's bodies that are anything darker than white. And it's,
yes.
you know, it's,
yes.
it's, and it's, you know, women who are not white are, maybe they are more voluptuous, maybe they aren't, but they're, as soon as you talk about a brown or black woman's body, it's immediately this very voluptuous other comes to mind. But I don't know, the twerking thing, that, like you said, that buttocks touching and all is just, it's that I understand. Maybe they'd want to outrule that. But as far as, I don't know, the exoticization of brown women's bodies comes in. And the problem is people don't know how to label it. They just say things are ethnic or things are exotic. Yeah. But they don't right. know where to place it, whether it's what ethnicity, what country, what origin. And people don't want to go further into that history and understand that. And that's where it's problematic to me.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to come back to go to the phones here. I'm going to come back to, Dar, what you were saying about the study that I also was reading, the mm-hmm. articles about the study about mm-hmm. why young black men are more accepted in interracial schools that are mostly white mm-hmm. in mm-hmm. in the suburbs of America. 410-319-8888. Alan, you're on the air.
Morning. How do you like my costume? Look over your shoulder. I'm the invisible man. Anyway, no. And I remember the 6-inch ruler, too. But there was just something about costumes. And I remember during the 60s, everybody wanted to be an Indian and wore the saris. And it's like, Dad, you done white. You, and everybody wanted to sing the blues. And I remember going to a dance once where there was a band there, and these guys were 16 years old, and the guy was singing about, please, Mr. Foreman, slow down the assembly line. He's never worked on an assembly line. What's this? Mm-hmm. And that bothers me a lot. And it's not just on Halloween when people dress up in costumes. I see, as Langston Hughes said, you done taken my blues and gone. Dreadlocks seem to be the shoulder length hair of this generation, and there's just not that respect that comes from that. And so, in honor of that, I'm going to dress up as Rush Limbaugh. I'm just going to put on a tie and jacket mm-hmm. and a suit,
and put some pillows under your shirt.
And
Jamal wrote in saying, when a black person wears a costume of a white character and don't do whiteface, many will know who this character is. Mm-hmm. For example, a person will dress up as Carmen Sandiego, mm-hmm. And many would immediately know she's that character regardless of her skin color. Why, for some reason, some non-blacks have to blackface just to look like a person of color? Mm-hmm. Is it truly needed to look like Prince, where all you need is the proper outfit and mm-hmm. the proper wig?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's ironic that many mm-hmm. were up in arms for the movie White Chicks.
Huh. Yes.
Mm. Right.
So we have literally
That's
3 minutes.
That's the point my sister made about
3 minutes
that
in this segment mm-hmm. before we have to move on. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Closing thoughts?
I agree with what he's saying as far as people being up in arms about people of color putting on, you know, white face when they're trying to be, you know, and White Chicks was interesting because they were trying to be white, blonde women, and no, you can't take it that far. You can't go there as black men. You can't do that. You can dress like your grandmother and wear a dress in a movie all day, but you can't be white women with blonde hair. And I think that when people want to go to extremes, they don't realize that they have to have a valid way to back that up.
I'm only just doing this because we only have a minute or two left. Mm-hmm. Closing thoughts? Amen.
You know what? I would just say that if it feels wrong, it probably is.
Mm-hmm.
And that nothing that you do outside of Halloween, if you wouldn't do it on any other day, just don't do it. And if it comes to you're trying to recreate or appropriate somebody's culture, somebody's race, somebody's experience, please don't. There are a lot of other Halloween costumes mm-hmm. out there that you can get.
Adara Yira, love the poet. Amidang Dang, thank you all so much for being here. It's been great to have you.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
Good discussion.
Thank you.